Hi, this is Miguel Sanan, and this is the Jazz Spotlight.
Episode 81.
Welcome to the Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that gives you the insight and tools you need to be in the music industry today. Artists, authors, and top music industry experts give you actionable tips that will help you promote yourself the smart way. Here's your host, Jan Ilunga.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to this new episode of the Jazz Spotlight Podcast, the fourth of the special series from the Porridge Jazz Festival. And today we have another incredible jazz artist. He has done so many things, both for the music community, but also for society more in general. He has inspired people on stage and off the stage. He's one of the founding members of the San Francisco Jazz Collective. He's a music teacher and he's an incredible saxophonist. I'm talking about Miguel Zenon, and he's here with us today, and I'm so excited. Enough with the chit-chat, let's dive right into the content. Just a quick note, you find the links with the show notes to everything Mr. Zenon and I talk about at thejazzspotlight.com/episode81. All right, here it is, a jazz talk with Miguel Zenon.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're ready for another inspiring episode of the Jazz Spotlight. And I'm so thrilled about who's joining us today. And it's going to be a very, very interesting conversation that I hope is going to inspire you. It's going to help you also to you achieving your goals. And joining us today is Puerto Rican jazz saxophonist. And he's also one of the actually founding members of the San Francisco Jazz Collective. He's a multi-Grammy Award nominee. He is a recipient of the Guggenheim and MacArthur Fellowships and is also very, very active with the education aspect of music. And we're going to hear more about that. And he's here in Pori in Finland at the Pori Jazz Festival with his quartet presenting his new album, Identities Are Changeable. I'm so excited to welcome on the show Miguel Zenon. Hey, Mr. Zenon, how is it going?
It's going great. Thank you, man. It's a pleasure. Pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure. And you know, already with the intro, when I interview people like you who have accomplished so much, it's so difficult to know, you know, how to try to keep the intro short. And I talk, maybe we can start actually from the present. So I mentioned you are here in Porri Jazz with your quartet and you're going to be playing Identities Are Changeable. And the first question I have to ask you is about actually the title of the record, your latest record, because I think it's a very interesting title. So where did you get the idea? Where does the idea behind the title comes from?
So I guess I should tell you a little bit about the record so we could get to the title. Mm-hmm. The project itself kind of was born from the idea of national identity. Mm-hmm. Specifically in this case, as experienced by the Puerto Rican community in the United States, and even more specifically in New York City. New York City has the largest Puerto Rican community outside of Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's something that's historically just been one of the epicenters, one of the exodus of Puerto Rican migration has been historically to New York City, which is where I live, and mm-hmm. I'm from Puerto Rico originally. So, I've always been interested in that relationship. I've always thought it was like really unique, a very unique relationship. Mm-hmm. And basically what I did with this project was I interviewed a group of individuals, mm-hmm. you know, many of them my friends or people who I knew, who were all New Yorkers, basically born and raised in New York or around New York. So they had that side of them very solid. Mm-hmm. But also had Puerto Rican descent through their parents or grandparents, mm-hmm. you know, and spoke to them about very specific things, such as their connection to language and mm-hmm. home and music and identity and, you know, a bunch of other different things. And from those conversations, eventually I wrote basically music surrounding each one of those themes, home, identity, you know, so each one of those themes has a musical theme also that I wrote for this project. The title itself is a quote from one of the interviews.
Okay.
As I was speaking to this friend of mine, Juan Flores, who sadly just passed away a couple months ago, amazing individual, great academic, and very, very knowledgeable about this whole matter. Actually, mm-hmm. he was a very inspiring source in terms of just undertaking the project itself. So one talked in his interview about identity as something that doesn't need to have like one definition or one side, something that could be multidimensional, you know, and that could mutate and change depending on the circumstance of the mm-hmm. individual or depending on the time of your life, what road you decided to take, you know. At one point in your life, you could identify with something very strongly, and then 10 years later, you could say, let me try this other thing and see how that feels, you know. And I thought that was very powerful when he said that, you know, when he mm-hmm. says that identities are changeable, because I felt that in the case of specifically the Puerto Rican community in the States, but I think any migrant community in general, there's always this idea of like, what do you really represent? You know,
right.
if it's the Turkish community in Germany, are you Turkish or are you German? Or what mm-hmm. is it? You know, what is it that you are? You know, or is it, you know, the African community in France or et cetera? And I've always thought that was unfair, you know, mm-hmm. that was unfair because they come from, their experience of a very, very particular situation that me, you know, being born in Puerto Rico or someone who was born somewhere else, doesn't necessarily experience it the same way. Like me as a Puerto Rican, I don't experience the same things that this New Yorkers of Puerto Rican descent experience, you know. So I thought it was really interesting and really powerful when he said that, and it just kind of like defined what the project was, mm-hmm. basically saying identity is something that's very important, but it's not something that we could just define. Like it's much more deeper than that.
And so you told us more about the meaning behind identities are changeable, where the concept comes from. And from the musical aspect, what does it mean for Miguel Zenón as a musician, this latest album? What does it represent?
So musically, basically, the whole album itself came from this sort of sociological idea. So it wasn't necessarily a musical source that gave birth to the project, but of course I had to turn it into music, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's still what we do. So, basically what I did was I started looking at this idea of identity as, you know, within one individual, within one entity, as something that has that have various layers, mm-hmm. you know, various layers. And as I was looking, you know, I have a sister who was born in New York of Puerto Rican parents.
Right.
And I was looking at her and she has all these layers, you know, she has the Puerto Rican layer and the New Yorker layer mm-hmm. and the American layer. And she's really connected to the African American tradition too. So she has that layer in there as well. So I started thinking about those layers and started thinking about how I could represent those layers musically. And, mm-hmm. and eventually I started experimenting with these rhythmic ideas where you would use specific rhythmic patterns or rhythmic melodies mm-hmm. and kind of like superimpose them with other rhythmic melodies, basically creating layers of rhythm that always coexist within the same space.
Right.
You know, like just as to give you a very basic example, like if you have three and two within the same space, right? So if you have, you know, for you musicians out there, if you have a half note and you put a triplet inside the half note and you put two quarters, they're happening inside the same place, but they also create a counterpoint, right? They create something, they create like a new individual, mm-hmm. but each one on their own is also an individual mm-hmm. as well. So I started experimenting with those things, and basically all the music on the record was born out of this idea, out of the idea of using layers of rhythm, in many instances too, like layers of harmony and melody, but essentially layers of rhythm to give birth and create the musical compositions. And that was my way to kind of translating this idea of identity into a musical perspective.
And I would like to ask you to go back in time and talk about your studies a little bit, your musical studies, because you are a graduate from two of the world's most prestigious and also challenging, difficult music schools, as in the Berklee College of Music and the Manhattan School of Music. And I wanted to ask you, first of all, what are your memories of those times at both schools?
So, I came to the United States to study jazz, specifically to Berklee in Boston and then Manhattan School of Music in New York. Essentially because in Puerto Rico, I didn't have there wasn't a higher education institution where I could study jazz. It just didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to pursue jazz studies, I had to go elsewhere, mm-hmm. you know? And it just so happened that I knew some people who had gone through Berklee and they really liked it, and it just kind of seemed like the place to be. So I made up my mind that I wanted to go there. It took me a little while. I gathered a couple scholarships and eventually made it over to Berklee, to Boston. My experience there was incredibly positive, you know. It's an amazing school, and it's just great program. But I think the thing that I got most out of it was that I was able, for the first time really in my life, I was able to be surrounded with musicians who were interested in the same things that I was interested in, mm-hmm. with people my age, right. you know, who I still play with and I'm very close with. So for me, that was very inspiring, you know, because mm-hmm. for a long time in Puerto Rico, I felt very disconnected in terms of what I was interested in and sort of alone in a way. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find a lot of people who shared a lot of the same things that I liked. So that was the main thing, you know, I mean, aside from having great teachers and great instructors, I was able to be in a situation where I was surrounded with, you know, like minds, people my age, my peers. Mm-hmm. Most of them actually were a lot more advanced in terms of their knowledge of the jazz language than I was. So I was also another kind of boost of inspiration, because right. I was looking at them and what they were doing. I would practice with them, get ideas from them, and the whole idea, the whole experience was amazing. It was also the first time ever that I had studied jazz formally.
Okay.
So before that, I never sat down with anyone who told me this is jazz harmony. I learned everything on my own, yeah. you know. So it was my first opportunity to do that. And then Manhattan School of Music was sort of an extension of that in many ways. But also Manhattan School of Music was important because that's when I moved to New York, where I mm-hmm. live now. And as I'm sure you know, New York is sort of the center of right. what this music is. So mm-hmm. I was able to be there, but I was also, while being in school, start interacting with a lot of my idols, you mm-hmm. know, and started playing with a lot of people that I really admire and interacting with them and learning from it that way also.
And I know that you're not only, like you just told us, you've really enjoyed those years there at the schools, but you also have, you know, implemented, practiced what you have learned. You put it up there for everybody to listen when you're on stage, but you also really paid forward. You really try also to help the younger generation by teaching. You have been involved in a bunch of different projects really around the world. I remember you have been, for example, to West Africa. You've been over here in Europe in some schools. You've been obviously very active in the States. So what I want to ask you, Mr. Zenon, is we are here in 2015. What do you think is the state of music education for what you have seen since you've been around so much?
Well, I have to say that in the case of jazz specifically, it's become a central part of what we do. You know, I mean, music education is sort of an essential part of it in many ways. I mean, it's common for us as musicians and any generation, my generation, older, younger, you go out on tour, there's always going to be a spot where you're going to have to teach, or you're going to do mm-hmm. the workshop, and that's just part of it. It's just a natural thing. I mean, there's more musicians now than ever. There's more music students than ever. There's more schools than ever.
Right.
So it's just growing, you know. And I think it's a great thing. I mean, to have that available. I mean, the one thing that I think could be a little risky as it progresses, you know, is that you know, you have all these young musicians going to school and getting degrees. Some of them, you know, spending a considerable amount of money just getting a degree and getting an education. But, you know, as time goes by, we have less and less places to play. We have less clubs. We have less festivals. So we have less opportunities for musicians, even though there's more musicians.
Right.
So at some point, you know, the math is not going to add up. I mean, on one side, it's sort of a positive thing because it makes things a lot more competitive, right? Mm-hmm. And it raises the bar for everyone,
right?
Having all these people out there. But then, you know, it's not like in the old days where, you know, if you play with Art Blakey, you play with Art Blakey all year. If you play with Miles Davis, you play with, you know, now, you know, musicians have to do here and here and here to be able to survive. And because there's not that many opportunities, a lot of the young musicians that finish school, they go out into the world and, you know, being as talented as they are, a lot of times there's not a spot for them, which I think is a sad thing. So that could be a tricky thing about education, you know. What I think is interesting about education in general, in terms of thinking about it in terms of different perspective of music, is not necessarily this idea of higher education, even though that's a great thing and it's very present. But this idea of using music as a way to sort of promote cultural activity.
Right.
Like, you know, like saying this is music, like in the case of jazz or in the case of classical music, a lot of the music that we think it's for a selective audience, you know, like really saying, you know, let's get this music out there. Let's bring it to the people and just give them a chance to be exposed. And it doesn't have to be for a specific type of people. It doesn't have to be the kind of thing where you just, you know, you're playing and people are picnicking or whatever. It could be a thing where you could involve people there, but at the same time, not necessarily, I mean, it's not like they're going to go buy 10 records after the show, but they'll enjoy it. They'll enjoy it just as music, as pure music. And I think that's something that jazz has the power to do. You know, and I believe that as we do that more and more, especially with the younger generations, you know, we're sort of planting the seed of saying, you know, cultural activity is something that is essential. You know, it should be there. It should be there for everyone. Everyone should have an opportunity to be exposed to that stuff, you know.
And so you told us also that there is this kind of paradox because there are more schools, more tools for people to actually become musicians, but then when it comes to put it into practice or to go out and perform, there are less opportunities. And if someone is listening to you and I, Mr. Zenon, and is maybe, you know, is about to graduate from music school, or maybe he's already starting out with their career, and, you know, they would like to look up to you, they would like to follow your footsteps, what advice would you have for them?
Well, my advice is make sure that you're taking care of everything you need to take care of. You know, I mean, this is a very hard job. You know, I mean, as artists, because it's a, in a way, I mean, we go through schools and we go through the systems, but in a way, we're our own judge. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to judge ourselves and say, you know, what is it that I need to do in order to progress and get better at whatever deficiencies I have, you know? And I think that's the hardest thing, just being realistic about where you are and where you need to go, you know. So spend a lot of time on the instrument, spend a lot of time working on your craft. I mean, that's sort of like the key to it, you know. If I was going to put it in a more simple way, I would say be prepared for when the opportunities come. The opportunities are going to come. When those opportunities show up, you want to be at your best so you can take advantage of those opportunities. Somebody comes to hear you. If you get hired for a specific gig or if you get an opportunity, which might not come back, you know, you want to make sure that when that opportunity comes, you're going to be at your best, you know.
No, this has been a very inspiring interview. You've told us quite so much more about you, about your new album. And I said earlier, you are one of the founding members of the San Francisco Jazz Collective. And I know that in fall, you are going to be performing with them before actually coming back here to Europe with your quartet for a winter tour. And to wrap up this interview, Mr. Zenon, I want to ask you about something, you know, more frivolous in a way, because you do something on your website, which I think is very interesting. Whenever you have time, of your busy life, you share some of, for example, the books you've read or nice movies you've watched or albums you've liked and you recommend people listen to. So I wanted to ask you if you have any recommendation. Is there either a book, a movie or an album that you've either read, watched or listened to lately that you would like to recommend to people and why?
Yeah, you know, that I put that section on my website. That was like pre-Twitter and Facebook days, you know, I mean, I just had the space and I said, maybe I should do that just to kind of share and, you know, a lot of, some people find it interesting. I think it's a cool thing, you know, to share. But if I had to recommend a book, I recently read a really amazing book by a writer by the name of David Foster Wallace. And he wrote a lot of great books, essays and stuff like that. And this book is called Infinite Jest. It's a very long novel. It's really great, really just unique, very unique book, you know. Movies. Let me see. I recently saw a really good documentary on Nina Simone, the singer. Mm-hmm. What Happened, Miss Simone. I just saw it actually a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. Really great, you know, and I've been kind of on a Nina Simone kind of hook the last couple of weeks. Right. Just got me listening to a lot of her music, so it's nice to see it. And so I've been listening to a lot of her records and also a lot of Joni Mitchell records,
right.
You know, another great singer and songwriter. I mean, it's sort of like a special sensibility, you know, mm-hmm. being a singer like that and writing music. It's I think it's very powerful. So I've been listening to a lot of that also as well.
Great. Thank you for sharing those. So guys, there you have book recommendation, documentary, and artists to listen to from Miguel Zenon. Mr. Zenon, thank you so much for being here with us, for telling us more about Identities Are Changeable, telling us more about your days back at Berklee and Manhattan School of Music, for telling us more about the current state of music and for sharing some of your recommendation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Alrighty, we are back. Mr. Zenon, thank you so much for your time, for being here, for your music and for your recommendations. So guys, you have heard a few recommendations from Miguel Zenon himself. And I want to remind you, I said that at the beginning, you find the links to his website, the new album, the recommendations and everything else we've touched on here at thejazzspotlight.com/episode81. All right, this is it for today. If you want to make sure that you don't miss out on any episode, the best way to do that is simply to subscribe to the podcast. You find it on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud. So just choose your favorite platform. Make sure to subscribe so that you get the new episode as soon as it's published. Jan here. Thank you so much for joining Mr. Zenon and I in this fantastic new episode of the Jazz Spotlight. And I'll be back with another incredible guest. Take care.